Come with us to a hidden country. Hey, welcome. We're going to take another look into the life and message of Elizabeth Elliot, who called us to live to a higher standard each day, and not be satisfied with throwing a little empty religion into life as a shallow substitute for giving God our best. We'll hear from family, friends, and others as well, all influenced by the life and message of Elizabeth Elliot. Hey, thanks for joining us today. And be sure to invite a friend to come with you next time. Speaking of come with you, we'll have some traveling again today. We continue our short series, Journeys with God. Coming up later, Taiwan and the lobster boat. That's not this week, but next week. Today, it's a hidden country and Mongolia that we'll be thinking about. Also, speaking of other countries, our guest today is Olga Cantrell, who translated Elizabeth's writings into Russian. Now, that coming up later. Right now, let's think about a hidden country. It seems that 1997 was a big year for traveling for Elizabeth, as she recounts her memories of God's faithfulness in her overseas travels. Think about people able to sleep almost anywhere, about Christ disguising himself along the trip, about a band of monkeys in the window. It's an inhospitable journey, one that includes snow and tundra, but also a luxurious hotel.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you again today about journeys with God, reviewing with you some of the faithfulness of God, the wonderful ways in which God went before us and blessed us and helped us in our overseas travels last year. We had more overseas travel in 1997 than we have ever had at any time. It is a very great privilege. It does entail some uncertainties, and I was describing the difficulties that we had yesterday with the lady who had been corresponding with us. We did have a time before we could find out where we were supposed to fly to. And then I told about a very strange message that I got early in the morning in our hotel room. The phone rang and a voice said, "Newspaper door open." And I said, "I beg your pardon? Newspaper door open." Well, I sort of guessed that I should open the door. So I opened the door and there stood a little boy with a newspaper. Amazing. We made a trip to the hospital to see the fiancé of our lovely guide, whose name was Princess Nahomi. We saw the usual crowded villages, garbage, people, tamarind trees, bicycles, motorcycles, auto rickshaws, huge trucks and buses, which blast their horns continuously, because we were told that if a man has not blown his horn and happens to hit somebody, then of course it's his fault. So the thing to do is to just blow the horn continuously. Men in long white skirts called dhotis, a truckload of apparently dead bullocks, or were they caribous, piled on top of each other. It turned out later that they were not dead, and they were water buffaloes, but they were lying on their sides with their heads hanging more or less over the back of the truck. It was really a horrifying sight, stacked up like cordwood. May 7th, 4:45 a.m. in the railroad station in Coimbatore. Several women sit on the floor, combing their own and their children's hair, applying face cream also. Two women lie on top of a table, one of them with a baby prone on her chest, all of them sound asleep. We went to bed at 10:15. I was awake till after 12. We got up at 2:30. Tom, our escort, is with us, thank God. Princess's parents came to the hotel to bid us goodbye at 3 a.m., not having been to bed at all. They had just bidden goodbye to the 200 ladies of the conference on four buses headed south. As we drove here in a taxi, we came through side streets lined with tiny hovels, and the occupants lay in the street, which was very narrow, only a dirt road with many bumps. The people are able to sleep anywhere, no pillows, usually shrouded head to toe like corpses. They were all over the train station, Dozens of auto rickshaws stand at the entrance of the station, their drivers lying curled asleep on the cement. A scarecrow in a rice field was wearing a sari. That's that beautiful Indian dress that women wear. A band of monkeys was capering in an empty, windowless house. Our train trip of nearly 10 hours is over. Now we find that our flight out of Madras for Bombay was canceled because we failed to confirm. Correction, our reserved seats were canceled. We rode in an auto rickshaw through the streets from the train station to the airport. Well, our next trip was a month later. One of those countries not very hospitable to Christians. There are many expatriates there who are teaching English. A small group of American women had asked me to come to their annual get-together in a hotel in a big city. And I think my listeners understand that there are some countries that really do not wish to have foreigners, especially Americans, and it presents some major problems for those who would like to take the gospel there. We arrived at 12:45 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and I wrote in my journal, I have no idea what time it is here. For hours, we've passed over vast tundras with puddles of various sizes, then great stretches of sea with weird patterns of broken ice, more tundra, snow, now low mountains striped with snow, and a large body of open water to the east and south. June 1st is my diary entry. A very luxurious hotel, far better than most U.S. hotels. I was to speak at 9:30 in the morning to 12 here in the hotel, and a group of women had come for a brunch. I was rereading bits from my old favorite De Caussade, and this is what he said, "The holiness of lives is mysterious in its simplicity and humility." And here I was in this foreign country thinking about dear old Mrs. Kershaw, dear lady that was a blessing in our home as sort of a maid, but just a dear, poor widow who came every day to help my mother. And she was just nothing but a ray of sunshine every day. And I thought of Mom Cunningham. I think of these saints of God that have so blessed my life. Christ disguises himself, De Caussade says, in order to raise souls up to that perfect faith which will discover him under every kind of disguise. Have you learned to see Christ in your husband, in your children, in that difficult neighbor? We're supposed to learn to discover Christ under every kind of disguise. I'm reminded of the hippie couple who appeared at my door at a very inopportune moment one time many years ago. And how often do I actually consciously see Christ in people like that? O divine love, says De Caussade, conceal yourself, leap over our suffering, make us obedient. What contrasts we saw in that country, women sweeping the streets with homemade twig brooms, and on the same street, heavy equipment, and around many building sites and skyscrapers, there were cranes everywhere. It seemed as though there were cranes everywhere, skyscrapers going up, buildings being demolished, traffic. Half the traffic was cars, trucks, and buses, and the other half, it seemed to me, if I could have counted, were bicycles and hand carts and motorbikes and wagons. I began then to pray constantly that the Lord would enable me to see Christ in these people and to help these women to whom I was to speak to see Christ in all those to whom God had sent them. And I gave them those words from De Caussade. Christ disguises himself in order to raise souls up to that perfect faith which will discover him under every kind of disguise. I'm sure you remember that when Malcolm Muggeridge interviewed Mother Teresa and asked her why she did what she did, going around picking up people who were dying from the streets in Calcutta, her answer was a very simple one. We try to do for them what we would like to do for Jesus if we could see him. More of my journal. Yesterday afternoon, with Kathy's young university women, all speak English. They have made a commitment to Christ, which means great danger for them. Six were called in for questioning recently. And I've learned since we left that country that one of those six had been expelled from the country because she had become a Christian. Kathy's house was a tiny apartment, dismal, badly in need of all sorts of repair, and cramped. But what a charming, sweet, happy crew of young women were waiting for me when we got there. Then I spoke the next day to two university classes, and I said to my hostess, "What am I allowed to say here? Surely I'm not allowed to mention Christian missions." And they said, "No, try to avoid words like that." And they gave me a list of code words. I said, "I can't do this. I'm sure that I'm going to blow it. I'm going to blow your cover." And finally they just said, "You just go ahead and say anything you want to say. They can't very well kick you out of the country." And so I told the story of my missionary work in Ecuador with the Auca Indians. That day we had boiled dumplings for lunch. And we went to several, I wish I could tell you exactly what they were, but it would be best if I don't reveal what country we were in. Then I had time with another group of Americans in a hotel room, eagerly asking me for my wisdom. And I said, "Lord, who is sufficient for these things? Help me to give them words which will be helpful, to strengthen them and encourage them in what seems to me an impossible job." Tomorrow I'm going to tell you about our trip from that place to another place, which was very different indeed.
A Hidden Country, that's Journeys with God, Part 2. We'll look at Mongolia in just a little bit. First, though, join us as we think about Russia. Let's hear from Olga Cantrell, who translated Elizabeth's writings into Russian.
I first really got acquainted with Elizabeth Elliot when I read her book, Passion and Purity. It was sent to me by a friend of mine, and I was in my late teens when I read it. And I was really impressed by her depth, by the seriousness of her commitment, the way she didn't beat around the bush and talked straight, especially to the women. I started translating parts of her book into Russian mainly for my own use, for my own enjoyment, I would say, so that I could share it with other people, just taking extracts and translating just a few chapters. And then after I married and my husband learned about what I was doing and prompted me to contact the publishing house and find out if it was already in Russian, and we found out it was not, and through the series of events, we were able to actually meet Lars and Elizabeth on one of their trips to Europe. We spent the day with them, and I remember we took them to one of the castles, and after a tour there, I was just standing there sharing with her how at that point I was having some just a foolish notion happening where I would say, "You know, lately if I want to say go right, I for some reason go left. If I want to say go left, I for some reason go right. And she just looked at me and she said, "Well, get over it." And I was a little bit stunned, but I was also really blessed by this just straightforward to the point. No, just playing around. And that's what I really appreciated in her life and in her work. As we got to know more of her work, I kept being blessed by the feeling of strong foundation that her teachings brought. Our daughter used to fall asleep to her talks. In our world of just everybody's talking around, being politically correct, her works really bring us a firm rock that we can stand on. And I've been really blessed by learning so much and acquiring so much knowledge of the Lord and of His works. And I believe it brought more depth into my life.
Olga Cantrell. More from Olga in just a little bit. First, though, we have part three of our Journeys with God series, as we think about the country of Mongolia. Elizabeth admits that she does have a tendency to worry. Maybe she sounds very confident in what she says, but there is a tinge of cautiousness and more. We'll hear about the Trans-Siberian Railroad, about her third husband, who was able to talk to just about anyone. He was a great escort, she said. We'll hear about remote villages, mud brick houses, and mud ovens.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot, talking again today about some of our journeys with God. I must say that we have certainly found that underneath are the everlasting arms. You may not know how much of a worry wart you were listening to, but it is my nature to be very concerned about things. Although I have a wonderful husband who certainly knows how to travel, I've never seen anybody like him when it comes to talking with people. It doesn't matter what language they speak, even. He has a way of communicating in a friendly, relaxed, non-threatening way, and he certainly does know how to thread his way through customs officers and airport taxes and taxis whose drivers speak another language. I would certainly hate to have to travel, as we have been traveling, without my wonderful escort. God has given me the great privilege. Well, I had told you about a trip to an unnamed country yesterday, where dirt was being carted in wheelbarrows and tunnels were being dug by hand and walls were being laid, and there was no heavy equipment around. And I keep thinking of those words from a hymn, I Cannot Tell. That's the title of the hymn. And it says, I cannot tell how he will claim his earthly heritage, how satisfy the needs and aspirations of East and West, of sinner and of sage. We went through remote little villages, mud brick houses, mud ovens, no color but mud, it seemed, on every side. Is there any beauty, any diversion, any love, or marital conflicts among these people? Those are the sorts of thoughts that went through my head. We saw rice paddies, nuclear plants, coal heaps, and then we found ourselves on an immaculately clean train, starting on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. This was a thrill for me, I have to say. We had a little stateroom. It had two beds in it. It had a little table and two comfortable places to sit. We had a little half bathroom, which we shared with the man on the far side. And there we were, hour after hour after hour, crossing the great Gobi Desert. Now that was a thrill for me, because when I was just a little girl, my father told me about two amazing women named Mildred Cable and Francesca French. They were, I believe, the first white women ever to cross the Gobi Desert. When we looked on the map, we discovered that there are actually three different Gobis. I think I'm correct in saying that they all belong in Mongolia, but it is a vast emptiness, a vast loneliness. Once in a while, we came to ordered fields, where we would see a solitary person kneeling or squatting and working away with hand tools. Then there were hills, then a green valley with horses drinking from a stream, green pastures, two shepherds, two flocks of sheep, still waters, and of course you know what I thought about as I looked at those. And at 9 in the evening, we pulled into a station out on the vast, desolate beginnings, I suppose, of the Mongolian steppes. Officials came into the train. They handed us papers to fill out and examined our passports. The wheels of the train were being replaced because of a narrower gauge from that point on. And we were told that this railroad goes all the way to Moscow. So we filled out the papers four times, and twice after going to bed, we were aroused, searched, and questioned. But on the last attempt for these officials to figure out who in the world we were, they finally just gave up on us because nobody spoke English. At 2:15 a.m., we left the station, and we're now in Mongolia. We had had a good rest. Our stateroom was immaculate. We had clean sheets, pillowcases, new wool blankets, good pillows, a tiny shower, and a wash basin. 8:45 a.m. We had seen horses, cows, goats, dogs, and, most thrilling to me, camels, and one small deer or antelope. I wasn't quite sure what it was. We stopped in one town, and there were some charming little boys begging for handouts from the train windows. We gave them some cookies, and they pounced on them and tore away. The scenery was so beautiful that I thought of Edna St. Vincent Millay's poem, "O world, I cannot hold thee close enough. Thy winds, thy wide gray skies, thy mists that roll and rise, that gaunt crag to crush, to lift the lean of that black bluff. Lord, I do fear thou'st made the world too beautiful this year." Then we saw a herd of dromedaries, a smaller kind of camel, close up. And finally, at about 1 o'clock that afternoon, we were met at the station of Ulaanbaatar. I must confess that until I received my invitation to speak in Ulaanbaatar, I had never heard of it. It's spelled Ulaanbaatar, and it is, as most of you know, I suppose, the capital city of Mongolia. We were met there by a beautiful woman, 6'2", an American named Martha Taylor from Mississippi. She took us to supper at a Mongolian family's home, and we had meat turnovers and a salad of cabbage and carrots. June 6th, I spoke by interpretation to a Bible school. The students were such an earnest group of young people. Before I spoke, they had a prayer time when everyone prayed simultaneously and with great fervor, and then prepared to settle down and listen very attentively. In the afternoon, our hostess Martha took us on a beautiful drive to the countryside, as they call it, out of the city into great rolling hills, green grass, weird rock formations reminiscent of Colorado Springs. One immense rock was called Turtle Rock. You would have no trouble understanding why it was called Turtle Rock. It looked exactly like an immense turtle. And then we had, most interesting of all, a visit to a ger, G-E-R, yurt in Russian. Some of you have heard the name yurt. I had never heard of a ger, but it's the same thing. It's a round house. Starts with a framework, and then it's covered with skins and felt and heavy cotton, perhaps canvas. We were invited into the home of some friends of Martha's. Although they didn't know we were coming, they immediately began to cook for us. In the center of the house was an iron stove with a pipe. Around the circumference were brightly painted beds, five of them, on which we were invited to sit down. Our hostess immediately served us milk tea, as they called it. It was very weak tea with hot milk and, are you ready for this, salt. Very unusual. Then we had bread with a yellow sort of butter made by heating milk on a stove, whipping it 1,000 times, skimming the thick yellow whatever it was that looked like cream. And this apparently hardens into slabs. We had never seen anything quite like it. It didn't taste exactly like butter, but our hostess, Martha, told us that it was very unusual for people to have bread there. We learned that Mongolians normally eat nothing but meat and milk. Can you imagine a diet of meat and milk? Of course, they make every imaginable milk product that can be made, including what I have just described, this yellow hard slab that was sort of butter. Then we had yogurt with sugar. And as we were about to leave, the lady of the house, our Mongolian hostess, began to boil lamb bits on the stove. She had been spending a great deal of time chopping lamb into tiny, tiny little pieces. And she was putting them on the stove for us. Our hostess, Martha, very politely declined and said that we were invited to dinner somewhere else, which was, of course, perfectly true. And she did so in a way as not to offend our hostess. We went then to the apartment of a girl named Mary Beth, where we had tea with a lovely group of new Christian girls, also Mongolian girls. We were taken to a performance put on by Mongolian dancers representing ancient civilization. Amazing, very strange kind of singing, strange to our ears. We would hardly call it melodious or tuneful. They seemed to be able to do things with their throats that we could never do. To my utter astonishment, when that performance was over, we met several foreigners who had read my books. A couple was not with the group that had invited me, but they introduced themselves to me as fans. Well, that does give one a start when you're in as out-of-the-way place as Mongolia. Can you imagine my utter surprise in such a faraway country? And it always causes me to think of the sovereignty of God. If Jim Elliot had not died way back in 1956 at the hands of ignorant people who thought that he had come to eat them, I would not have been in Mongolia, because I would not have been writing books. I suppose I would still be in Ecuador in the jungle. Journeys with God, so marvelous, so unimagined. How we thanked him for his faithfulness throughout those many weeks.
Part 3 of a 5-part series on Journeys with God, that focusing on Mongolia. Well, we're going to join Olga Cantrell once again. Olga was the Russian translator for Elizabeth in her writings.
My husband and I were visiting in the States, and we had the opportunity to come and stay a few days with Lars and Elizabeth in Magnolia. The thing that struck me the most about being there is how much of their house witnessed of the Lord. How much I was just blessed. Wherever I went, I would see pictures, I would see scriptures that would continually point me to the Lord. They had this big window in their living room that overlooked the sea, and over it, it had a sign written in wood, "The sea is his, and he made it." And it was just such a big testimony of how big God is and how purposeful she was, that everything around her really pointed people to the Lord. And I haven't been in many homes like it. I was also really impressed how welcome they made me feel. That was probably the first time that I slept on really nice sheets and was so blessed and thought, wow, even such a little thing like this brings you blessing and brings you comfort and shows the care. And that is how I want my home to be, and that is how I want people that come to my home to feel. And that's been a really good example. When we first met in Finland came to see them, we felt, of course, awed by meeting Elizabeth and Lars. But they very quickly showed us that they really did not want to be treated like celebrity, that we just need to relax and treat them as normal people, which I think also speaks a lot about the kind of character we all want to have, that we are really all servants of the Lord and should not put ourselves above anybody, and we should make everybody feel easy around us the way Elizabeth made us feel easy with her. And we just, you know, spent the day, had a nice chat, drove around, had some fish, you know, had dinner later in the evening. I remember they did not believe us that my husband and I didn't have an argument. That was a little fun thing that we came away with. But again, I was really blessed by the way how simple they were, how simple they treated us. And it was just natural to, you know, have a chat and talk about different things and not to feel like we are somehow beneath people that we're with.
Olga Cantrell, who translated Elizabeth's writings into Russian. We know it's good to have you with us once again, but our time is coming to an end. Thanks for letting us come into your home, maybe along with you as you drove across town or took a walk. On behalf of the Elizabeth Elliot Foundation, in cooperation with the Bible Broadcasting Network, let me invite you to check out elizabethelliot.org. More Gateway to Joy programs, but also videos, devotionals, and other resources. ElizabethElliott.org. Well, until next time, may God remind you each and every day, you are loved with that everlasting love. And underneath, in chaotic times, underneath are the everlasting arms.